Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stas Ciolkowski.
And we're so glad you're listening to us today on Monday, May 2nd. And our theme today is mothers. And before we get into all of that, I think we might have some weekend patter to talk about.
And we should thank Andy.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you, Andy, for introducing the show with Tarry Here, as you do every Monday, singing that lovely original composition of yours.
So what weekend patter?
Well, you just got back from Utah.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
That's a trip.
Quite a trip. The flight, it's interesting. I got, for the first time ever, I haven't flown that much in my life. I've flown quite a bit in the last 20 years, 25 years. But this trip enforced something about which direction the prevailing wind blows. the difference in time. Going from Washington, D.C. to Chicago and then changing planes and going from Chicago to Salt Lake City, going that way was 16% longer in time, the two flights, than going from Salt Lake City to Chicago and then Chicago to Dulles.
Huh.
And it dawned on me, of course, the wind doesn't blow equal in both directions, or else would have to stand still, I guess. But so the wind, the air speed or stream has to be going from west to east. And of course it is, because that's where our weather comes from. When we get weather maps, it's always stuff. Very seldom do we have, weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of weather only coming from the Atlantic Ocean side. It always comes across the country from the west towards the east. So, and that prevailing wind pushes the plane a little bit, I guess.
Wow. So this made a big difference to you while you were sitting there counting the minutes.
Yes, it did. Actually, I did my best to try to doze off. I just, there's planes, the experience of flying is not, I never, say, oh boy, I'm going to go for a long plane ride. The only long plane ride I've ever really enjoyed was when we went to Poland and we flew, I think we flew to, I don't know what country we flew to before we got to Poland, but it was an incredibly long flight, but it was luxurious. We were served a meal on the flight. We had snacks. It was very much different than a continental flight.
Hmm.
Is that the right word? I don't know. Anyway, but we had a great time seeing the grandchildren and their parents. And of course, we were treated wonderfully as always. And we just had a really nice place. We stayed in a very nice B&B. It was very small, but cozy, and we had everything possible we could want there. And we had a really great visit. And Grace's birthday party, her 12th birthday party, was fun. And there were some young friends of hers and their parents were friends of Grace's parents. And so there were adults and children, and about five or I guess six or seven children altogether, including Grace and Matthew. And then there were parents. And so there were interesting conversations. And the best part of that party was that there was an ice cream cake. And I love ice cream, so that was wonderful. Actually, that wasn't the best part of the party. That was the neat part to me. I liked the cake was decorated very nicely, and there was plenty. So
nice. It was good. Someday I will get to meet these grandchildren.
I hope so. They might be coming east sometime. That would be interesting.
Yeah, that might be fun.
Yeah.
We'll have to get them to tell stories.
Oh boy.
Would they like to be on the radio?
I don't know. You know, that might be a possibility. They might. They're going to be coming to... I'm not exactly sure of the situation, but anyway, sometime in June.
Okay.
I'll have to check on it.
My weekend, actually, it was not the weekend, it was Thursday. But since I last spoke with you, or since we last were on the radio, I was in Moorfield, West Virginia, at the Eastern West Virginia Community and Technical Community and Technical College, yes. I think that's Hardy County, I'm not sure. So about 100 miles from where I live in Hagerstown. And we stopped in Davis and spent the night there at the Billy Hotel, Motel, with our friend Joy Malinowski. And so it was a whirlwind trip. It was 24 hours or 36 hours, something like that. But I got to tell T.H. Barnes, and it was... live, but it was also broadcast on Facebook for students, and I gather some other people watched as well.
Yeah, and
it was a lot of fun. It was a wonderful audience. Some history students of Eileen Evans, who co-hosted the event with the college, Voices from the Earth co-hosted, and nursing students. And then about 10 staff from the college. And they asked difficult but cogent questions during the Q&A. And they were a rapt audience during the performance. So I really enjoyed myself. And of course, it's beautiful out there. Very rural.
What were the questions? Who were they questioning, you or T.H.? Oh.
First T.H., as soon as he finished speaking, there was a Q&A for T.H., and then there was another Q&A for me. And
were the difficult questions?
Well, one of the questions was they wanted T.H. to sing. And T.H. has sung before. Well, yeah. T.H. grew up in a children's chorus at the New York Colored Orphans Asylum. Where he lived for 5 or 6 years. But I have performed TH before and included songs that he would have known. And those are fun to do, but I had not prepared that for this session, even though Eileen had months and months ago gave me like a really quick, she was in the car driving and I was listening and sort of taking notes on scrap paper. And she reminded me after the session was completely over that she had told me to be prepared with song. And apparently she coached somebody to ask that question. And I was stymied for a moment because I couldn't remember any of the songs that TH has sung in the past, but I finally came up with one and sang a few lines, not the whole song, but that was pretty funny from my perspective because I wasn't expecting it.
Oh. So TH could only sing something from when he was.
Yes, he could. He would only sing songs that
he couldn't sing. White Christmas or something.
What?
He couldn't sing White Christmas or something like that.
No, he could not sing White Christmas. Well, he lived until 1942. I don't know when White Christmas was written.
I think it was a little bit later than that. But, okay. Or I don't know. I don't know. But anyway,
the movie. Okay. The movie that, what,
that is that be. Because is that because she? Oh, that's a technical thing. I was just wondering, is that because in your mind you don't want to violate some kind of time thing?
Or, well, yeah, you know. I mean, that's those are the protocols when you're performing somebody from the past, unless you explain that they time travel.
Okay, I just wonder, you know.
So when I'm telling T.H. Barnes stories, it's 1942. I say that.
Oh, I know. The first time you said, first time I heard you tell T.H. and you said, and you mentioned the date at this place, I was like, what the heck's wrong with her? It's 1942, and you know, in my head, and you know, it, you know, I mean, I caught on
eventually.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah, it made sense, but at first it didn't. You know, the first impact of hearing that, you know, didn't. I thought it's not 1942. It's, you know, so anyway.
Well, I'm so engaged in historical portrayal, and I listen to her historic portrayals often. Right. So I'm totally there, but I am aware that I need to say it more than once, need to say the date more than once, but it never occurred to me that somebody would not understand why it was that date. So that when I'm introduced, when TH is introduced, the person reads what I've given them, which explains that Fanny Crawford is going to portray blah, 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 and the dates that this person lived and how the Q&A works. So they have that information up front, but I still repeat it myself a couple times because I'm aware that everyone, including me, forgets what you were just told. So I do try to include that, but it never occurred to me that it would discombobulate someone to be told it was 1942 when. So that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, yeah. See, and in my mind, like when I've seen, you know, people doing portrayals, and I don't ever remember. Of course, I don't remember names, places, or dates. But oh my goodness!
Did you see Sheila Arnold do Mommy Judge at Jonesboro? Well, actually, every time.
No.
Mommy Judge. Did you see her do Mommy Judge at Stories in the Round?
No.
That was before your time. Okay.
Right. Because that was early on.
Oni Judge will become belligerent on stage if someone asks her an inappropriate, chronologically inappropriate question.
Yeah, I can believe that because in for Speak Story series, she was doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, but I was thinking of Mark Twain. Is one of the things I've seen Mark Twain portrayed a number of times in my life, and I don't ever remember him saying dates or anything to establish a date. He just, you know, he just told his stories and stuff like that. So, it's interesting, you know. And I'm glad that it only was a brief thing, you know, 1942. Wait, what are you talking about? Oh, okay. Now I get it. You know. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yes.
So, do you want to tell us about Speak?
Yes. Speak. Coming up very soon. the posters are not up yet because... we've had some discussion about it was possible that the teller was not going to be able to make it and then was going to be able to make it and lots of different things. Anyway, coming up on the 10th and 11th, Kuniko Yamamoto. And she is going to do a thing about mime, magic, and music, I think. And in June, Bobby Norfolk. And I guarantee those 2 months are going to be wonderful. The interesting thing is that I know that there will be a much difference in style, which is one of the things that lately in the last year or more than the last year, I have heard many comments, and so have other members of the group that works with Adam Booth heard comments about it's really nice that the storytellers are so different. The people really appreciate that you know, you don't get three Andy Offit Irwins in a row.
There are no such thing as three Andy Offit Irwins.
Well, imitators. You know what I mean. The style.
Yes. Diversity.
Someone like Donald Davis is a wonderful storyteller, and I enjoy listening to him. I don't want to hear him every month. on speak and stuff like that. So anyway, and we have a variety of people coming up. So, and the concert on Tuesday will be in person and will be broadcast by Zoom. And then on Wednesday, it will be strictly in person. There won't be any Zoom for Wednesday. And it will be at the Irma Aura Bird Center.
Wednesday.
Pardon?
Wednesday.
Yes, on Tuesday and Wednesday. So, yes. Because our future home, which is supposed to be in Shepherdstown, and it will be, it won't be available until after June. And the way it's been going, we may wind up not being in that future home nearly as soon as we thought. Originally, we thought we were going to be in there shortly after the new year, but it has taken the owner longer than we figured. And I'm sure than he figured to get it ready. So anyway, that's where we're going to be. And then we have lots of other really great people coming up, but that doesn't make any sense to keep announcing people in other months or years or futures, you know. So,
all right. Glad
are you ready? Are you ready to tell?
I am ready to tell.
Okay.
All right.
Because we are 18 minutes into the show.
Yes. This story is a new one for me. I only just discovered it this week. It's called Annie Christmas and her 12 sons. Along the colorful waterfront of New Orleans, and up the river, even as far as Natchez, Mississippi, folks talk a great deal about a strange woman. Though they say she's been dead for some time, rivermen still measure strength by her standards. He's almost as strong as Annie Christmas. Well, or maybe her sons, they say about men who've done superhuman things. For Annie Christmas weighed 250 pounds, stood 6'8", barefooted, wore the largest and most beautifully curled mustache along the entire river, and was more powerful than any riverman who ever lived. Annie Christmas could carry 3 barrels of flour at once, one balanced on her head and one under each arm. When the river got high one spring and was about to flood the country above New Orleans, Annie Christmas prevented the disaster by throwing up a new and higher levee all by herself in one day. One time, she wanted to get a loaded flatboat from New Orleans up the river to Natchez in a hurry, so she just grabbed the tow line and set out on a dead run. They say the bottom of that flatboat scarcely touched the water the entire trip. Captain just leaned back in his chair and tried to make his fiddle sound like a mockingbird. And the crew amused themselves making bets with the river gulls about who would get to the next bend the quickest. Annie Christmas was a great fighter. When she knew she was going to have a fight, she dressed in men's clothes and trimmed her long, curling mustache close so it wouldn't offer anybody a good hold. She licked the daylights out of every bully on the lower river, and they say Mike Fink, champion fighter of the Ohio Valley, never came to New Orleans again after she sent him word if he showed up in Louisiana one more time, she would have him poled back up the river, lashed to the keel of his keelboat. Annie wore a bead necklace when she was all dressed up and looking pretty. It had a bead in it for every ear or nose she'd chawed off and every eye she gouged in her fights. When she died, it was 30 feet long. Annie had just one weakness, a gambling man named Charlie. Charlie had a curving mustache even longer and shinier than Annie's, and he wore waistcoats that would put your eye out. Annie was in love with Charlie for a long time before he'd have anything to do with her, but he finally gave in, married her. And the next year she presented him with 12 sons all at once. And before they were 6 years old, every one of them boys was over 7 feet tall. One night, Charlie went to a gambling hall in New Orleans on Chipotle Street and began to play roulette. He put a quarter on red, leaned his head on his hand, and watched the little ball finally come to rest. Red won. Charlie never moved, just let his money ride. Red won again and again. After it had won 5 times straight, Charlie's friends begged him to stop while he was so far ahead. He was bound to lose sooner or later, they said. But Charlie paid no attention, just sat there with his head on his hand, not moving a muscle. When Red won for the 16th time and Charlie was over $8,000 ahead, the croupier announced the house would not play with him any longer and ordered him to leave. Charlie didn't move. Croupier pushed him. Charlie fell out of his chair to the floor. He'd been dead for some time. The house had been playing against a dead man, and the dead man won. When Annie Christmas found out Charlie was dead, she was inconsolable. She gave him a very grand funeral and spent most of the $8,000 Charlie had won on it. And then she put on her 30-foot necklace, her black silk dress, gave instructions to her 12 sons, and shot herself. Sons did what their mother told them to do. They put their mother's body in a coal black coffin, loaded it on a coal black hearse drawn by 16 coal black horses, then 6 on each side, clothed in coal black suits. They walked beside the hearse as the horses slowly rolled it down to the river. A coal black barge waited there, and they put the coffin on it. At midnight, in the dark of the moon, they cut the coal black moorings, and Annie Christmas, with 6 7-foot sons on either side of her, drifted down the river and out to sea, never to be seen again. And as they floated downstream between the levees, folks living near the river heard a strange, mournful tune rising in the air. The tallest of her sons was singing last song for Annie Christmas.
Wonderful. Where did you get that?
That comes from The Hurricane's Children, Tales from Your Neck of the Woods by Carl Carmer. Copyright 1937. Okay. Now, I actually found it in the Treasury of Southern Folklore, which was my dad's book.
Well, I was going to say you found it in your garage, I'm sure. One of those books.
Yes. The editor of the Treasury of Southern Folklore is B.A. Botkin. And I have seen this book on used bookstore shelves, so I know it's still available. I mean, it's way out of print, but you can find used copies of it. There must have been a lot of copies printed because I have seen it frequently.
And who is the author?
The editor of this book I'm holding.
Yeah, well, the one where you got
it was taken from Hurricane's Children by Carl Carmer.
Carl Carver.
C-A-R-M-E-R.
Carmer, oh, okay. Good. Well, I like that. It was like
it's a folk tale.
Yeah. And I was expecting maybe that Babe the Blue Ox would be coming into that too.
Yeah, Mike Fink, yeah, same thing.
But the Mike Fink thing was really nice.
Yeah, well, he was a keelboat guy too. So, but sure. So this book, The Botkin Treasury, is 1949. So it's, I imagine, Hurricane's Children. I haven't looked up Hurricane's Children. I'm going to go on Abe Books because that's where I buy my used books. If they don't have them at Wonder Book in Frederick is my first stop, their website. And then I go to Abe Books. So I will look up Hurricane's Children and see if I can find that one.
Makes me think maybe what just the thing to do is to go get a whole bunch of old story books.
No, I have a whole bunch of old
stories. I know. That's why I was thinking to sneak up there some night when you're cleaning out the garage, right?
Well, if you want to borrow any of them, you're welcome.
Anyway, I like that story very much.
Me too. I love it.
A lot of strange things in it.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if I can find some more, like about her sons, or I mean, I did find a bit on the internet. Not much more than is in this story. Yeah.
And the character is Annie Christmas.
Yes.
Well, interesting. I like the fact that she had a curly mustache and having 12 sons
all at once
sure strikes me as somebody doing an incredible thing.
it would be a bit uncomfortable, I would think. Especially since they were so tall and big.
I don't know. Who's the Octomom? Remember her?
Yeah.
The lady who had eight. That's weird. Yeah. Yeah, that would never happen if the men were carrying the babies. There would be one pregnancy per marriage.
If that.
Well, yeah. Period. Well, you've been listening to this storytelling hour at enlightenradio.org.
Woohoo!
Brought to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And last week, we had a unique thing. I don't think I got to say it on the air. I meant to, and I think I forgot it. But last week, we actually had a triangulation for the radio show from the studio in Bolivar to the head storyteller in Hagerstown. And then to the second head storyteller in Salt Lake City, Utah. And that was really fun. It was strange getting up at 6:30 in the morning, or actually a little sooner than that, because the time difference for the show was 2 hours out there. But it was fun.
It was fun. And it's all on talltales.enlightenradio.org if people want to go and listen to last week, as well as for four more years of four former years.
Yes.
stories.
Why?
And radio shows. Okay.
Time goes by so fast. I'm sorry.
It does go fast. Why, yes. We are already almost
30 minutes.
35 minutes or so.
30
minutes into the show.
Yeah. I started just on 3, 2, 1.
All right. So, well, we said 3, 2, 1 twice also.
I started on the second one.
All right. That's good. Okay. You have a story for us?
I do. And I debated about this. Well, you know, I was going to, well, anyway, I'm going to talk about my mother. And I don't often talk about my mother. So, but I'm going to talk about my mother, and I want to say, just tell a bit of her story and mine, and since we are very much connected. In a way, I've been thinking about my mom. My mother and I had a difficult relationship at times, but I'm hoping that I can give a picture of mom a little different than I might have talked about in the past. I don't think I've told any single story about my mother. So when my mother was carrying me, as they say, when she was pregnant with me, she had been told by a doctor after my brother Tony was born 3 years before me, almost four, that she shouldn't have any more children, that it was not good for her health. However, in August of 1941, I was born. And my birth was a difficult time for my parents, mostly for my mom. On the day of my birth, as she went out the front door of the row house they lived in Baltimore, had a marble step. As she started to go step down onto the step to wait for my father, who would be pulling up and parking in front of the house as they did in those days. Nobody would ever park in Mr. Paul's spot because that's where Mr. Paul lived. So he had a right to park his car in front of his house. I think people would be hysterical if you did that in a city nowadays. But my mother tripped and fell on those steps. My father happened to be parking at that time. Immediately got out of the car, helped my mother into the car, took her to the hospital, St. Agnes Hospital in Baltimore. And shortly after she was examined, my parents were told that there was no heartbeat and that I would be stillborn. That caused quite a bit of confusion with my dad and my mom and what was going on. However, it turned out that just 4 hours later, I was born and I was healthy and probably talking already, or at least squawking already. Because of that, my mother, who was a very religious woman, of a devout Catholic, was convinced that the Almighty had saved me for something special. And so from the moment of my birth, when she realized that I was apparently a healthy child, an infant, my mother was convinced that she should do everything in her power to have me take the priesthood. That was the expression in those days. And she persisted in that throughout the rest of her life. To me, it was a foolish thing for her to do, because I had no interest in being a priest. At any time in my life did I ever think about being a priest. Although it did occur to me sometime that that would be a pretty good job. They usually would supply you with a place to stay, and lots of parishes had, you know, had a lady to cook for the priest and somebody to do the housework. And but I just didn't want to be like that. I like realized at an early age that I really did like the females. And I knew that the priests weren't allowed to have girlfriends. So, but, well, my mom had a struggle with some of the things I did, but always came through for me. And I don't know if I would have said this a number of years ago, but in reflecting about talking about mothers, I realized that, you know, she suffered a number of times because of things I was in. When I was in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, I was in a choir, a boys' choir at the Polish parish where I went to school and where I went to church. And when we got new choir robes, the choir director gave out patterns and the kind of material to use and stuff like that. And each of the mothers was expected to produce a choir robe. And I did not remember why it was so difficult, but there was something about sewing it on, you know, my mother's sewing machine, which wasn't electric. It was one of those pedal things. And anyway, she had a difficult time. But instead of giving up on it, she picked up the phone, called Mrs. Bouse, Miss Francis, my childhood best friend's mom, and asked for her help. And then Miss Francis and mom got together, and Miss Francis was able to help out using her sewing machine, which was an electric model. Anyway, I got a choir robe. I didn't know how much trouble it was for my mother to make that choir robe until afterwards, because I wore that robe in a couple of performances. And one of those performances was on Channel 13 on television. And that was a pretty neat thing to do. I was amazed when we were in the television studio at how bad that room looked. When I saw the broadcast, which had been recorded, I was amazed because it looked like the inside of a small palace. And they had really done something to make it look good on the film. My mother was always looking out for me in ways I didn't understand at the time, but now I'm thankful for. When it came time for me to go to high school, I went to 3 interviews with my parents, 3 Catholic high schools, each one of them strictly for boys. And 2 out of the 3 interviews, the people doing the interview, one was a priest at one school, at another school was a Zavarian brother. And then at the 3rd school, there was a Christian brother. Well, the Zavarian brother and the priest told a sort of fib to my parents about using the modern techniques of discipline in case I did something wrong. It was, you know. But the Christian brother, Brother Gabriel, who interviewed my parents and me, said, we're pretty old fashioned here, and we believe if your son would do something that was inappropriate, misbehaved in some at certain levels, we don't spare the rod. My mother turned to me and said, this is where you're going to high school. At first, it was irritating to me because I didn't want to go to that school because my best friends in the neighborhood all went to a different school, which is where I wanted to go. However, shortly after the beginning of school year, when I made the varsity soccer team and I made some friends, I liked the school a lot. In looking back 50 years or more, 60 years or more, I can think that my mother made the right choice. She knew I needed to be in a school that would keep me in line. And they did. 2 or 3 times in my 4 years, I received some punishments. And it didn't hurt me. I mean, it might have felt something at the time, but it didn't it didn't damage me in any way. It did, however, make me realize that that school had been picked because my mother knew I needed some strictness since I had this. Seemed like not an ability, I guess. Maybe it was a fault in my makeup, might be from DNA, which we never heard of when I was in school, but that I seemed to want to do things that other people, especially adults, found objectionable. And not anything terrible like stealing or, you know, throwing bricks through windows or anything, but just irritating, I think. And sometimes it was with opening my mouth and offering opinions when no one had asked for them. I think you might have come across that in our discussions at times. Anyway, my mother, believe it or not, my mother would have liked my beard. When I was a sophomore in high school, St. Patrick's Church in our neighborhood had a priest that was very involved with the youth, and he wanted to put on a passion play for Easter time. And a group of the boys that went there to the CYO dances and things, and actually some of us played ball for St. Patrick's, were interested in helping the priest. And so we became the people in the passion play, and it was, the passion play was done with a reader on the side of the stage. There were tryouts for reading. Robert Bouse, Bobby Bouse, good friend of mine, was chosen. And Father picked me to play the part of Jesus. That caused quite a bit of laughter among my friends. But I believe he did that because I was skinny and we were going to do tableaus. There wouldn't be any actors walking across stage and talking. And what we would do is take a position, and then the curtain would open, lights would come up, and the reader would commence to read, and they were reading things written a long time ago from the Bible and other areas. And it would mainly, the reason that Father Hooper picked me was I was skinny, and he said, with my arms stretched out and fastened to the cross, I would make a good image of the crucified Christ. The one thing, and I'm not sure why he did this, except that I think everybody pictures Christ with a beard. I don't know. You know, I wish I could get a copy of some of his early pictures, but Father Hoop, he did the spirit gum thing on my face and put a beard. We had two performances, one on a Friday night and one on a Saturday night evenings. And he asked that I do not do anything to the beard because it was a lot of trouble to get a beard on my face. I don't know, maybe it was his skill or anything, but it looked great. It really did look great. And so he asked, and he had written a note for me to take to my mother and say, could you please keep the beard on his face because we have another performance tomorrow. And the truth is, my mother liked the way I looked in a beard. She thought I was pretty young, and she thought my face wasn't mature enough yet. But she said, if you ever grow a beard when you're older, that would be nice, because you do have to just, I don't know, it looks nice. I liked it too. I found myself staring into the mirror late on Friday night after the show and up in the bathroom next to my bedroom and being amazed at, keep thinking about it. And as you know, you've known me for a few years, you know that I have a beard, and I've had this beard for over 50 years. Is that possible? Yes, definitely. Yes. So, anyway, as I was aging a little bit, teenagers, I had a girlfriend, wound up that I became engaged. That's a whole nother story. I was 17, she was 15. That drove my mother a little bit crazy, that I think if she had had the ability, she might have done a backflip or something to emphasize the fact that she thought I was losing my mind at 17 and all this stuff. But it turned out that we managed to get through it. And when the time came that I was to go into the Army, I had to beg my father to sign my papers because I was only 17. And I knew that my mom, at the time I didn't know this, but I know later on in life I did realize that my mother didn't say goodbye to me because it was too hard for her. She actually was more afraid than my dad that something terrible might happen to me while I was in the Army. Of course, there wasn't a war going on at the time, and so nobody was going to be shooting at me, we hoped. But anyway, one of the last things I wanted to say about my mom is that while I was in the Army in Germany, I was in Army in South Carolina, then in Texas, but then I went to Germany, and I was there for almost 2 years, 22 months. One of the coolest things my mom did was I got a package that was in a special kind of container, and all this stuff had been flown from Baltimore to where I was stationed in Germany. And that was a box of homemade Polish sausage. And I don't know how much it was, really. I don't know how many pounds it was, but it was pretty heavy. I wound up taking it with me the next day after it was delivered to me in the barracks to our field, where on top of a small mountain where our radars were installed, and gave it to the cook there. And he was thrilled. And we managed to have 3 or 4 meals with Polish sausage and included in it. About 6 months after that, my mother sent another one of those. They called them care packages in those days. And when I went to college later on, people would get those. When I came home from the Army, is where I'll end this story. My mother had passed away the day before I got home. And she died before I turned 21. And it took me a long time to put in perspective just how much my mother loved me and how she did things to help me be a better person. And I didn't appreciate it as much as I should have. And now I do. It's a little bit late, but I do appreciate it now. And I'm thankful that I had such a nice mom. Thank you.
That's a whole new twist on your mother's story.
I know. And I've been thinking about that for a long time. About there's, it's okay I think it's okay to reflect on someone who may have done things that you didn't like when you were, my mother did hit me, used a belt on me more than a couple of times. And for a long time, and especially because I think for a long time, I was angry with her in a stupid way. I was angry with her for dying and not giving me the chance to be an adult. because I think she would have been very proud of me being a teacher. My dad was, and I know she would have been really happy to see that I had a good job as a teacher and that I did okay. And it took me a long time to realize that it's easy in an immature mind way to think only of negative things in a relationship. But I think with age comes at least some wisdom that you get on reflection, and you can think about, and when you look back, you can think, that's why it was hard on my mother going shopping, because she had a hard time walking. And she was very sick, and I didn't know how sick she was. And, you know, with a great deal of years between those events and now, it's pretty easy to see that as a young person, I focus a lot on negative things about my relationship with mom. But as an older person, and too late to tell her, I appreciate that she did lots of wonderful things for me.
Good story. Happy ending. Wow.
And we're already 51 minutes.
All right. Do you have a short one you want to tell?
Well, I do have. This is because they are all mothers. You know, I've been married three times. My brother always says, third time's the charm, and that's for sure. I'm married to a wonderful woman who you know, and is just the best thing that ever happened to me. But I have been married three times, and a unique thing, I think, is that each of my mothers-in-law, each of the ladies whose daughter I was married to, were just absolutely wonderful to me. Just wonderful. Each of the women from my first marriage, my second marriage, and my third marriage, this one, the mother of the bride was just lovely to me. Treated me like a king all the time. And I enjoyed being with them and doing things for them, helping out whenever I could with something they needed done. I just think that's pretty remarkable, because there are so many stories about mothers-in-law, and so many men I've heard complain about her mother, my wife, you know, stuff like that. And I never had a complaint, never, you know. And in fact, one of the reasons that when we moved from Arkansas to the Pittsburgh area was to help take care of Terry's mom, who shouldn't have been on her own. Her husband had passed away, and she was not really doing the best job taking care of herself. So for the last 4 years, and 4 years and a half or so of her life, we were there and we helped her, and she and I got along great. They were for many, many, many breakfasts we had together, and I would often fix breakfast for the two of us, because Terry was doing things like yoga, which wasn't at home like she does now, but was off to a place where they did, you know, had the yoga class, and she went a couple times a week. And so mom and I, her name was Lodi, she and I would be home together in the morning, and I would fix breakfast, and we had a great time at breakfast. We did a lot of laughing and a lot of kidding and stuff. And anyway, I think it's neat that I had women in the mother position that were very nice to me. And most people have been very nice to me all my life, so no complaints.
Oh, Are you guys doing anything special for Mother's Day now that there are not actual mothers?
No. Not about Mother's Day, but about Sunday is Mother's Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's also Terry's birthday.
All right.
And so we are going down to the shore for a few days.
Very good.
Next week's show, next Monday, I will join you from Ocean City, Maryland.
Very good.
So, yeah, and we're going to go and celebrate Terry's birthday and have a nice, relaxing time. No airplane ride for this trip. So, and we'll be able to walk on the beach and walk on the boardwalk and mostly sit on the patio or on the, you know, outside the room and look at the ocean.
Well, that's funny because Jose's birthday, my husband's birthday, is always right around Mother's Day. So it's not on Sunday, but it's the next couple of days. So
we'll be interesting
too. I had forgotten they have, our spouses have birthdays close together.
Yeah. And they're both wonderful people.
They are.
Yes. And they're very tolerant of us.
Usually, yes. I do sometimes push the window, but okay, so is it time to close?
It is. It's 56 minutes.
Very good. Well, this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stacy Okowski.
Your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. The Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community, that would be you out there in radio land, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
More blues from Sweden. Blues from Sweden, and be storytelling around 5 p.m.